in the towers up above.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM coming to you from unceded Musqueam territory in UBC Vancouver. My name is Simon Welton and we're about to do the White Noise Show as always. We have a very special show today. We're actually going to do a one-act play called Old Times, but I'll let our brilliant Richard Blackmore explain a little bit more about that later. I just want to let you know, of course, as always, you can follow us on White Noise UBC on Facebook. You can tweet us at White Noise UBC. And you can also check out the best of White Noise at whitenoisecomedy.podbean.com. Tonight's after show, that coming up straight after, is going to have special guest Connor Shelput, who's going to be in the studio joining me. He's one of the actors on the show, so we're going to have a little chat. And I'd also, lastly, but by no means leastly at all, I would like to dedicate this following show to a friend of mine, Miles, who passed this week. We're all going to miss you so much, man. And I hope you're in a better place. But here we go. Here's the White Noise Show.
Warning: the following programming contains adult subject matter and some strong language. It is a work of satirical fiction. All characters and advertisements are completely fabricated. Listener discretion is advised.
Good evening, and welcome to a very special edition of White Noise. Today's show is brought to you in part by FIFA, the beautiful game's ugly truth. Tonight, I present to you an original play, and I hope you're going to like it. It's about three gentlemen who meet once a year in one of the worst, nastiest, scummiest bars in Montreal.
Hi, I'm Alec.
And I'm Graham of the Stumblers Inn.
So without further ado, I give you Old Times.
Sup?
Pardon?
Said sup, dude.
I'm not deaf, son. I just don't speak gangster. Want a drink, please? Preferably something without a health code violation.
Beer?
But what kind is it?
Alcoholic.
Jesus Christ. Yes, that will have to do. Two of those, please.
Oh, you're meeting someone here?
No, I just don't want to talk to you again in a hurry.
Expecting a call?
No, just trying to avoid talking to you.
So what are you then, a retired comedian?
Ha! Don't get to own as many monocles as me, cracking wise, son. Got to crack whips.
Ah, you're a dominatrix.
No! CEO of the largest private financial institution in North America.
I bet that gets the girls wet.
Quicker than any three-chord ballad you ever wrote waiting for your hot plate to boil, you KD-eating, studio-apartment-owning dickhead.
Well, that's where you're wrong, buddy, because I still live at home.
Oh, touche.
Right here are your pints. Tip jar is right over...
Ah, that's no problem.
Well, never mind then.
Oh. Ring, you bastard. James!
Cartwright!
Good to see you, old timer. Please, sit down. I already ordered you a pint, so catch up.
Can you believe it's been another year already?
I know. Why do we always meet in this same godforsaken cesspit? There are homeless people having sex outside.
Because we always have.
But one of them was looking me in the eye the whole time I was walking by.
Come on, you're not that senile yet. We both remember. You love this place as much as we all did.
Ha! I also love dancing and women with loose morals.
It was here as freshmen. We got you to come out of your shell eventually, and we swore the three of us would meet back here every single year to catch up, so we would never lose touch.
And I still enjoy our time together, because you, sir, are a gentleman, like me. But that other scumbag, all I could do without.
Where is Ted? I thought he was coming as soon as church was over.
Ha! When did that buffoon become religious?
No, he's at church's chicken with the arthritis club. They go every Saturday after bocce.
Ah, fair enough. Those arthritis guys are wild. Whew. Their motto is, I hear, what goes on tour stays quite sore.
So I've heard. I wouldn't mind some occasional swelling every now and again.
Ah, yes.
Actually, that's sort of what I wanted to tell you.
You're not joining that bunch of hedonists, are you?
No, I was going to wait until Ted got here, but... here goes. Geraldine has moved on.
Oh, James, dear boy, that's tragic. Oh, why is it always the best ones? God's a bastard, he is. A bloody bastard, I say.
Well, I don't think you can blame him. It was her choice.
Oh, dear God, say it wasn't so. Was it quick and painless, at least?
I don't know about painless.
But she's in a better place now, right? You have to take solace in that, man.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with you there.
You can't think like that. She was your wife, for God's sake. No matter her foibles, she was a good person.
Well, I never really cared for Florida.
Florida? Florida? I thought she died, you stupid bastard.
Why would you think that? I just said she had moved on. She went off with our salsa instructor. I knew I should have been more enthusiastic, but I just don't give a shit about dancing.
I thought that because we're old, James. People our age don't just move on. This isn't college. We only move on into the bloody ground these days. Did you know, I haven't seen another pair of breasts besides my wife's in 30 years? Not counting my own, of course.
I know what you mean. If I squint in the mirror, mine give me half a chubber.
Well, there's always the silver lining, hey, sir? Cheers!
Thanks very much for the pint, but you need to slow down. I'm not going through last year again.
Oh, come on. I offered to dry clean the damaged property.
It turns out you can't dry clean a Yorkshire Terrier. Or my grandchildren.
Well, what were they doing in the bathroom at that time of night?
They weren't. We were in their bedroom. The children are still convinced the Monopoly man broke in and vomited all over them.
Well, kids are too wrapped in cotton these days anyway. The world's going soft, it is. They need to bring back compulsory armed service like we did.
We did? I got shipped up to the Arctic where I froze my family jewels off, making sure the commies didn't take our precious damn ice, whilst you sat in an office making sure the generals had refreshments during meetings.
Only because my father knew the right people, we still learned how to be men.
I nearly lost the parts that made me a man, and you were just making tea. All I'm saying is, there are other ways to improve society besides making us better at killing each other.
Oh, name one.
Well, you could start by actually funding education and healthcare better, so people have the basic tools to become successful members of society.
Ha! Pish posh! That is money down the drain. If you don't pay your own way in life, you'll never appreciate what it really takes to achieve everything you do.
Cartwright, your grandfather was an earl. Although perhaps you're proving your own point.
Exactly. I earned it by being born in the right place at the right time. It isn't my fault if someone else doesn't have the foresight to be born into grace and ends up born into gruel. And even then, you play the cards you're dealt. You just might have to trade a few more than the next guy to get a flush. But if you sit there, tapping on your go until someone else takes the pot, then that's your problem, not mine.
Ted must be done by now.
Oh, why do you even invite him? Oh, my goodness. I mean, he has to be the most obnoxious person I have ever met. I don't know what you see in him.
I do wonder that myself. Well, he was our roommate for 4 years at college and the best man at my wedding, and he's been joining us for this drink every year for the last 50 years, so I did feel somewhat obliged. I can't abandon him now. What kind of person would I be?
I know, but he's just such an asshole.
Afternoon, gents.
Oh, God.
Ted!
Jimmy? Cardi?
It's Cartwright, you cheeky bastard.
Whatever, you old fart. Who wants a cold one?
Go on, then. Two of them, please.
Hello? Yes, this is him. No, I don't think we should do more to stop fracking. Why? Well, for starters, good luck trying to call me when we run out of fuel. Now, get off the line. I'm expecting a very important call.
Doesn't Ted look younger than us by comparison, eh?
Well, that's easy done when you've never worked an honest day in your bloody life. Or taken responsibility for anything.
We all choose our own paths, and just because he chose a less traditional lifestyle doesn't mean he isn't a valid person.
Well, it does to me. I never slacked off or did things that were inconsiderate of others. I never chased bar tramps, robbed people, or gambled my life savings on some crackpot get-rich scheme. That man is a poster child for what is wrong with Western society.
We all have our vices, Cardi. Whether it's alcohol, drugs, sex, food, love, money, or religion, we all have something that occupies our time and affection, so don't be so quick to judge. It's what makes us human.
Ha! After you're dead, none of that will matter. All that will matter will be what has your name on it, so people remember who you were. So get some great big, tall, long, thick monstrosities with your name carved on them. I already have three, and I'm going to get two more. You just donate the building to some fashionable cause, and they treat you like you're the bloody Pope. Lovely guy, by the way. Terrific squash player.
Good to see the pair of you. Can't believe it's been another whole year. Doesn't time fly? Cartwright, I assume you're still robbing the world blind.
Huh. Well, at least I never used a gun to do it like some people. And how is working at the bowling alley? Or are you planning your next heist?
Oh, come on. You know I haven't tried any of that nonsense for years. Down at the alley, we just got new 5-pin distribution machines, and my goodness, it's practically revolutionized the way we do things there.
And you're still the assistant manager, are you?
Well, yes, I've hit the ceiling. The only guy above me is Doug the owner, and he's 20 years younger than me, so I'm definitely going to die first.
Then why stay there wasting your life? That's absolutely preposterous.
Well, thanks for the concern, but actually, I'm not. I have decided to retire this year and move away. I found this paradise of a place that has these really cheap houses and loads of women in their 20s who would love an old guy like me with my modest pension and youthful hair.
First of all, that is a toupee, clearly. And how original would that be? You really think you're the first guy to move to Thailand?
No, not Thailand, you fool. New Brunswick! The girls there are desperate for it. Speaking of which, how's your old lady, James?
Not good, Ted. She moved on.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, lad. Where to? Florida?
See, he knew what I meant.
Must be a poor thing.
Hey, only relative to you, buddy. Just because I don't get a personal Christmas card from the Pope doesn't make me some ignorant peasant. We went to the same college. It just happens I decided to dedicate my life to teaching, and you dedicated yours to erecting giant phallic symbols everywhere. We have different priorities.
It took me a long time to forgive my father for sending me to that wretched school. He thought it would teach me life lessons living in such squalor.
Well, I thought McGill was quite nice.
It damn well was, and it's. Cartwright, you haven't got a clue at all. You have no idea what it means to suffer.
You really think so? You don't think people born of any status don't suffer unhurt like all the rest?
Well, what do you have to worry about? You have everything, Cartwright. You have 2 helicopter pads at your place. 2! Who needs 2?
Well, come on, Ted. Some people have more than one friend over at a time. Hey,
I'm not as infallible as I seem. You both think I have everything my way and it's all easy for me, but you're wrong. It's not. I've been quite ill.
What, a bit of sniffles, is it? Or a bit of the tennis elbow?
No, it's really quite serious. I haven't even told my wife because I know she would only worry.
That's why you keep looking at your phone, isn't it?
Yes. You see, I'm expecting a call from my doctor to tell me if I have prostate cancer.
Oh my goodness! That's awful! I'm sorry to hear.
I'm sorry.
It's fine, lads. No need for the hysterics.
No, I mean, I'm sorry. I don't understand what you mean. Which one is that? Is that the, bum cancer?
No, it bloody isn't. It's a gland that, yes, is accessible from the anus, but it's not arse cancer.
All right, it's just after a few of those examinations, you do start to connect the two together.
So what's the prognosis?
Well, they've removed some of it already, and they said the biopsy will reveal if it's spread. If that's not the case, though, I should make a full recovery.
Relax. I'm sure you can buy your way out of it as usual anyway.
You can't pay off death, Ted, as much as I would love to, but I will try anyway, if I can. But anyhow, let's not talk about that unfortunate issue on the one occasion a year we see each other. Please, James, on the phone. You mentioned you had finally retired?
Yeah, but I thought I would be spending it with Geraldine.
Better off anyway, James. Now you're retired from teaching those awful kids, and you can do whatever your heart desires. And now, you don't even have a woman holding you back.
I do miss teaching sometimes. It's nice having more free time, but I miss having that sense of purpose. Life is always full of opportunity with education.
Bah, what a good my degree did me.
No surprise. Your degree was in theology and you're a sworn atheist.
Yeah, probably a bad idea in hindsight, to do an entire degree ironically. My father never knew. He thought I was becoming a civil engineer. I never did tell him the truth in the end. Just sent pictures of me every Christmas holding a blueprint and a hard hat.
What a total waste of time. You could have done something productive with your career, like me and James.
What exactly have you done?
What have I done? I run a highly profitable institution that has amalgamated several of the largest national banks in the country over the years. I mean, to create one of the most successful corporations in the nation.
No, what you've done is brought out or squeezed out every little bank in the country, turning them into one great big company, killing a ton of separate jobs along the way, which are now understaffed and mostly sent overseas, all in the name of shareholder profits, whilst giving the middle finger to consumers, the very people who keep you as comfortable in life as you are.
Oh, come on. You don't know what you're talking about, sir. They were failing companies which were mismanaged into the ground, and they practically begged us to buy them out.
Well, victors write the history books. So we'll have to leave that one up to debate, I think.
Well. Hello? Cartwright speaking. Oh, for goodness sake, would you please leave me alone for 5 minutes? I'm expecting an exceptionally important call. Now piss off, you stupid cow.
Telemarketers again, eh?
No, my bloody daughter. God, she needs to get a life.
You know one thing I won't miss about teaching.
What is that then, James?
Some of those awful students. I once caught one masturbating on school property.
We've all tried to sneak a cheeky one in at some time in a publication, right, lads?
Yes, but not during social studies, for goodness sake. There is nothing sexy about Canadian Confederation at all.
So what are you going to do now, James? No job, no woman, and no commitment. You could do anything you feel like.
I'm just not sure. I haven't had to worry about planning my life since I married Geraldine. I've been worried about what the future holds because it was always just with her, living as we were into old age.
Well, no rush at all. You could join me in sunny New Brunswick, of course.
Thanks. Perhaps if I really get desperate, I might just call you.
Anytime, my friend. Anytime.
If I die in my office chair, doing paperwork, I would die a happy man. That's what comes from a life of nobility, Ted.
I could have done other things with my life, but I lived, Cardi. I lived well and truly.
Myself and the missus, we live. We go to California every summer, you know. We really let loose.
You don't know the meaning of let loose. In college, me and James used to get up to all sorts when you went home every holiday to suckle mummy's teeth.
Ted, just watch your mouth. That woman is 90 years old, but if she was here right now, she would break you like a twig. She was Oxford Women's boxing champion, you know, and once killed a Japanese man with her bare hands.
What? She fought in World War II, did she?
No. It was in Costco. Headbutted a man in produce. He took her yogurt, apparently.
We did get up to some laughs back then, eh, Ted? Although we never really tried any narcotics, did we? Bit late to try anything now.
Are you joking, James? You just need the right doctor, that's all. They can give you all sorts these days that make you feel all kinds of lovely.
Hang on, Cartwright. If you have cancer, does that mean you get free marijuana?
Well, I wouldn't touch the stuff.
Why not? It just takes your mind off the pain and it makes screwing better, you know?
If doctors can give it to you now, why isn't it legal?
Because then the politicians would have to admit that they were wrong all these years. They've bullshitted us so long, they would rather throw the occasional one of their own under the bus when they get caught and have them claim that they had a moment of madness instead of admitting that they just liked the occasional bit of hashish.
Bless you.
They have to tell this yarn about being under so much pressure they cracked and acted impulsively and smoked, but now they are remorseful for their transgression and are going to rehab. Apart from anything else, that is an insult to rehab and everyone in it. If you do want to do drugs, that is fine. Just don't expect us to let you run the country after. All right?
One thing I never understood about legalizing drugs is this. If you're buying crack cocaine and you're paying in blowjobs, how do you work out the GST?
Maybe just add a little hand job for the government.
I think politicians prefer reach-arounds.
Oh, good one, Carney. Cheers.
Aren't you going to answer it?
I can't.
It's all right. I'll do it. Hello? Yes, this is Cartwright's phone. Yes, he was expecting a call. I see. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, that's all very clear. Okay, I will let you know. Yeah, thanks. Bye-bye. Bye.
Well?
I'm really sorry, pal.
Oh.
I said it was negative.
Oh, God. No. What? Negative? But that's good, you intolerable buffoon. I'm going to be fine.
Oh, whoops. Well, then there you go.
Oh, did you hear that, James? I'm absolutely fine.
That's great news. Congratulations.
I'm perfectly fine. I feel fantastic. Oh, my back. Jesus Christ, my hip. Oh, God, I think I'm going to be sick. Oh, better sit down. Bloody
Not
hell.
Not that fine, oh. Then, eh?
Well, it's all relative, isn't it? Jesus. Whew.
Well, it has been a pleasure as always, but I had best be going. I'm up early. I'm going to Fort Lauderdale for spring break. I hear they're having an over 65s wet t-shirt competition, and I can't miss that. Mind how you go, lads, and if I don't see you before, I will see you this time next year. Good luck with the backside cardi. And remember, James, you're only as young as the woman you feel.
Thanks, Ted. Take good care, and best of luck in New Brunswick.
Don't need much luck with a positive attitude, hard work, and a newly quadrupled credit card limit with no intentions of repayment. They won't be able to claim it back when I'm 6 feet under.
Ha! They always have ways of recouping losses, my good friend.
Nah, not for me they won't. I'm just taking a leaf out of your book, Cardi. I used to rob a bank with a gun. Now I do it with a pen. Good night, gentlemen.
All Times was written and directed by Simon Welton, starring the voice talents of Connor Neckleput, Sierra Wiley, and Simon Welton. Music and sound effects by Max Cheers.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theatre, Discorder lives. Favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
All right, there you go. That was the White Noise show. Thank you for joining us. We're still going to continue with the White Noise after show. My name is Simon Welton. You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM. So yeah, we're going to play a little music right now, and then we're going to come back and chat with Connor Neckleput, who you just obviously heard within that show. So he's going to join us in the studio, and we're just going to have a little natter about all sorts. But first, we're going to play some music. So the next track coming up is from a band called The Young Novelists, and this is their track, Always Make the Mistake.
What you wanna do? Tune in to the Red Jam Slam Radio Festival in celebration of Aboriginal Week from June the 17th to June the 21st. The festival will be broadcast across Canada on 7 different stations.
Tune in to www.ckdu.ca or at 88.1 FM in Halifax, Nova Scotia. www.chuo.ca or at 89.1 FM in Ottawa, Ontario.
www.ckuw.ca or at 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
www.ckxu.ca or at 88.3 FM in Lethbridge, Alberta.
And in Vancouver, British Columbia, tune in to
www.cjsf.ca or at 90.1 FM.
www.cooperadio.org or at 100.5 FM.
And www.citr.ca or at 101.9 FM.
This year, listen live from 1 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time from June the 17th to the 21st. Check out redjamslam.com.
Yeah. When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder Magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the top floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Hello, hello, hello. So, sorry, I'm just having a bit of a coughing fit. So I'm joined in the studio now by Connor. How you doing, Connor?
I'm doing well, Simon. Hey, everyone.
So, we're going to have a little chat today. Let's first have a chat about what we just listened to, old times. I always wonder, like, which character do you think you're, like, closest to in real life? Because they're obviously quite the spectrum of sort of straight edge to just straight up, you know, hedonist.
Yeah,
I mean, even
sure.
He pretty much explicitly says it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably going to find myself in the kind of I forgot their names. Jeez, James? No,
James is the middle guy.
The middle guy, kind of the moderate, kind of the even hair-headed. Probably most identify with him. I'm definitely not as kind of radical or kind of out there as Ted, with slight Cartwright tendencies, I'd say. So certainly leaning kind of, I guess, right of center, maybe. But definitely kind of James would be my anchor.
I think we just worked out his political leanings as well.
No, I definitely call myself as independent politically. Yeah.
Nice one.
I do have to defend myself because in certain parts of the world, if you get caught out saying the wrong thing, then you really kind of balls deep in a bit of a mess.
Have you had that experience?
No.
Oh, that's right.
It's just something I have to say. I mean, but like, you're around campus, you're around the city, you get the vibe for the local area. And I'm the type of person who I like to really have this different influences, a lot of stuff. Whenever I form my opinions, I want to have them sort of well-informed, but from a variety of different sources. So there'll be some things I might sort of say, or I might sound a bit more conservative, some things I might say that sound a bit more liberal. And I'm sure, really, that's most people.
Well, I think you're right, because I think this idea of an ideology, that's a problem with it a lot of the time, is that we don't behave in such a regimented way in life, because it's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the more postmodernist idea of particularism, where you behave certain ways in certain situations based on social norms and culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, that's just the way you have to be a successful member of society, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That it's not being phony, it's being, you know,
receptive. Well, yeah, because, like, every single decision and moment of your life is influenced by every single decision moment up to that point, as well as every single factor, environmental, social, political, everything that's really surrounding. And even if it's like a really, do I eat Cheerios or Weetabix kind of decision or whatever, everything sort of goes into that. So every situation is different but adapted. But yeah, and like, you have to know your audience in one regard. Because, I mean, you don't have to betray your principles, but when speaking to some people, just to have like a good conversation, whatever, you might want to sort of take a different edge. Or people are well-rounded individuals. There's lots of different influences that go into everyone's opinions. So it's not as if, yeah, people are betraying their opinions, but definitely you can use different situations to attack things with different angles. And that's what, like, all the best kind of philosophers do. As all of the great critical minds are able to see things from different perspectives and get people to think in different ways. And I think most people really do that even if it's subconscious.
But I think even in philosophy, it had to come full circle, in that you have people like Socrates, who I think would do that, because they can cover that with their idea of virtues, and the idea that to have these virtues is to have, like, you know, one of the virtues would be to be receptive to people's needs and wants and issues. But then you get into, like, the Hobbes and the sort of dark age, post-dark age sort of philosophy, and it gets very regimented again, because it's all a reflection of the church's regimentedness. And then it's not really until the 20th century, when you get into, like, Jean-Paul Sartre and things like that, or maybe a bit earlier with like Kant and, mm-hmm. and like those 17th, 18th century. But it, yeah, to me, like it's almost, yeah, it sort of went, it started that way and then it came back to that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, because that is in sort of philosophy and political thought, there is that the idea of, so the pre-modern thought was kind of everything's kind of cyclical, goes around in sort of circles. And I think there's a lot to say for that. I think historically, we do see patterns of loosening and tightening.
And nature as well is all circular.
Absolutely. But that idea is constricting if you only adhere to that. Then the modern idea of everything is progress, which absolutely isn't true. You can see why one would believe it. You think of like the advances we've had in so many fields, healthcare, medicine, wealth, but obviously that's an issue which can be taken in various ways, so I won't sort of stick to that one. But you can sort of see the line of thought there. But then the kind of postmodern idea of kind of everything is just...
Well, it's a web, product, really.
Yeah, exactly.
You go in and out of this web, and it may be for the better in some regards, but the worse in other regards.
And the problem with that is that it's non-committal, and most people like a certain level of commitment or consistency in the way that they do or think.
It's because they want to feel like they understand it.
Exactly. Because if you have every situation be totally independent, then you really can't apply sort of precedence to it or your past experiences necessarily, and that means that every kind of decision, again, like whether it's small or big, every sort of situation that you put yourself in or found yourself in, is really, you can't really make a wrong decision in many ways, which many people, whether the person involved or the observers, don't like that because it can yield results that they don't desire.
But that's because you grow up in a country which has religion and therefore has this idea of concrete moral beliefs. And so that's their experience, is these concrete beliefs, but that's not reality. That's just what someone wrote in a book at some point.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, yeah. But anyway, what we also want to talk about is, so that play we just heard was originally written for a great theatre festival that goes on every year at UBC. It's run by the UBC Players Club. And it's Cub.
A little lion there. It's a mascot.
Yeah, he's very good at organising. we got him in the studio. That's brililliant. We do this every year, and it is always a raging success. We always have original pieces in it. And this year, myself and Connor are working on two separate things that are both going in. So we were going to have a little chat about that. So Connor, tell us about what you're doing this year for that.
Well, so for this year, I knew I wanted to write a piece, and I always kind of tend to write sort of comedy pieces, if you want to sort of stick it to a binary. And I was really sort of struggling to come up with an idea, because I had a play originally in mind, like a longer, because the festival's mainly supposed to be plays that are less than sort of half an hour, really.
A one-act play, to
be specific. Exactly. Because the past year, certainly, we had a lot of great pieces. I think we had about seven pieces in our last 2015 edition. And they were all really great pieces, but it was about 2.5 hours.
It was nearly 3 hours.
Yeah,
it was long.
It was totally... I mean, even as an audience who are thrilled to be there, after a while you want to have... we had an intermission, but you want to break it up. You want to do something a little bit different. So it was a bit too long, and so we're trying to reel it in a bit this year. I mean, all the pieces were great though last year.
Absolutely.
But so I was thinking of another longer play this year, and turned out so it didn't really work. But there was a part of it, like the final kind of scene, which I thought had some potential. I'd been sort of writing before anything else, bizarrely. And I was thinking about just sort of finishing that idea and then submitting that. And I'd written most of it, but for some reason, I was thinking of different ideas as well, because I wasn't sure how well it was going to work as an independent piece, because it was supposed to be part of like a three-part play. So I was sort of thinking of ideas, and I had a bunch of them going around my head. And then one day I was like, what if I just, you know, for the sake of almost my own practice and experience, try to write like a sitcom, like a 22-minute kind of play, because a lot of sitcoms are filmed and performed in like a theatre environment with a multi-camera sort of setup.
Yeah, if you're doing like, well, it's a three-point camera, like studio audience, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, pretty much. So I was sort of thinking, like, what if I sort of did something like that? And then I was looking for ideas and sort of thought, you know, just something simple, because this is almost as practice for me, like trying to be sort of improve myself as a writer, trying to test myself as a writer. So I thought, okay, let's just like a standard kind of situation, dinner date. Works out. I think it's a pretty classic routine. We've seen it in like different places all over. And I thought, all right, we'll try that. It's a bit sort of stereotypical, but I want to see what I can do with it. I want to see, you know, I want to just be able to represent that and sort of make it my own. And so I was thinking of it, and then I thought, because the whole time I'm thinking of this in heterosexual terms, because I'm heterosexual, and that's the way I think.
I didn't realize there was a...
The first image and characters that come to my mind are usually that. But I thought, wait, hold on a second. Like, I sort of like, what? That doesn't have to be the case. It really doesn't, because you know what? There are lots of people who aren't heterosexual, asexual, homosexual, bisexual. I don't know why they have to be that way. So you know what? I want to make it...
You should rephrase that as you don't understand why the plays have to be that way, not them, because it sounds a bit like you're saying they have
I don't understand them. No, you're absolutely correct. Yeah, so I absolutely mean the play in that regard. I don't know why my train of thought has to make it that way. And so I thought, yeah, let's make this gay, which in itself sounds like a weird thing to say, certainly. But so yeah, I thought, you know what, we'll have two guys, because I'm a guy, so I always imagine male characters because I'm biased and that's just the way I do things. So I thought, let's have two guys and let's just see where that can go, because I think there's some options, because like having never, because I don't think in those terms naturally, so to do so is actually like, hey, this is like a new perspective almost. Like, I want to see what I can do with this and not try to be stereotypical or should like really play on sort of trivial kind of common myths or anything like that, but really try to like make a play that is just different from something else I've ever thought of. And so the idea of it is this guy, main character Howard, he's just a regular guy. He's not like a stereotypical flamboyant, he's not stereotypical, and he's like hitting on every sort of guy that walks in the room. I think like just a regular guy, bit cynical, bit witty, and he's gay. And so he's having a dinner date at his house with a guy he's met on like a Tinder kind of like app. So and then his friends come back, his roommate and his girlfriend come in, and then it kind of takes off from there, and it involves all of them, as well as like a jilted kind of ex-boyfriend who comes in to kind of not to ruin the date, but comes in at the wrong time, so to speak. So I don't want to give too much away, but this is kind of some of that in it. That's and so yeah, like I said, I'm just trying to really test myself, make something that's kind of funny, that's easy on the ears, on the eyes, and see where that goes, really.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you talk about like writing for men is perhaps easier than writing for women or whatever, but I do like that George R. Martin quote about that, where he says that someone asks him how he's so good at writing for women, and he says, I just write like they're people, and that's it.
Yeah. it's funny because like, I mean like as a, I haven't written lots and lots yet, and he's, dare I say, ancient. he's been around for a while, he's had lots of writing experience. Like some of those newer, I get caught in yeah, and just thinking, like, the natural thing I would do is base it on myself, more or less. Not myself as in my actual character, but, like, the way I tend to view the world and stuff. So I think it's important as well. And, like, for me, it was an excellent kind of time to sort of sit there and go, wait, it doesn't... We can do things differently. I don't have to subscribe to my own kind of...
With your own experience.
Yeah, exactly. I want to try and do something different. And that opens up to different audiences. Opens up my own perspective on things. And yeah, so really trying to engage people who... it's weird, because it's like a type of person, but it's not, because like, no matter what you are as a human, whether you're what sexuality or what race you are, you're still exactly the same. It's just your experiences are what really make it. So trying to focus on like the past characters rather than the fact like that, oh, they're a certain sexuality. And so trying to do this the first time, it's like, I'm trying to tread like a good line here, because I want to be responsible, I want to write well, and I want to have a bit, but I want to have a bit of fun with it as well, and not come across the wrong way.
Well, that yeah, I mean, it, you know, it's always a fine line between playing to the tropes of while avoiding the cliches of any culture, sort of stereotypes and stuff. Like, yeah, it's tough. It is tough, but I hope it works out for you. We're gonna play a song now, and we're gonna come back, and we're gonna chat a little more. So next up is Leaf Rapids, and this is Everything in Between.
Shed the sound. Russ, right? Russians, Ruskies, communists, communists. Oh, now you remember.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Russian Tim, and I'm the host of weekly punk rock radio show called Rocket from Russia. Every Tuesday, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m., Rocket from Russia is aired on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, or CITR.ca, anywhere where internet is paid for.
Alright, there you go, that was Rocket from Russia. You definitely check out that show if you like punk. Alright, so we're back in the studio talking with Connor Neckelput. We were talking about Dionysia.
Yeah, the play I had just written, and I know that you've written a piece as well for this year's Festival Dionysia 2015 Part 2, because we're doing it again the same year for the first time, so... But you've written a piece, and you submitted it, so do you want to talk to the listeners about your piece?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. So I've written something very different this time, because I usually write, obviously, comedy. But this time, I wanted to challenge myself, like Connor talks about. Like, you know, I mean, for me, I always try and, you know, you could give me any sort of weird project, and I'll try it once just to see if I can do it, because... Yeah, I don't know, I feel like as a writer that you have to challenge yourself like that, otherwise you become, you might be good, but you become very narrow in your, in what you do. I mean, so like I've tried writing a kid's play before,
which... What was it called?
It's called The Quest.
The Quest.
Yeah, someone gave me like this very vague outline, like basically it was like, we want four scenes, one in a castle, one in a fairyland, one in a candy land, and one in like a jungle. And one was a pirate ship, and and they meet a lion at the end, and that was the outline.
So you've written The Chronicles of Narnia,
basically. Once I'd written it, I was like, it's, yeah, except without the weird religious overtones. Yeah. Yeah.
So I couldn't tell the difference.
but no, for Dionysia this year, I've written something very dark. It's quite short, and it's about this couple. And the idea of it basically is it's a couple that go to bed, and through the conversation that start, they basically their whole sort of lives.
When you say go to bed, so I need to clarify, but is that go to bed and sleep, or is that they, go to bed? Yeah.
Well, they get into bed. Sure. That's part of the thing is, you know, he's like, we haven't done that in a while, and that obviously starts the kind of a bit of a. Sure. The spark that lights the fire, but it's, you know, it, I don't want to give too much away, just like he said.
Yeah, sure.
But it definitely gets dark, and it's pretty, it gets intense, and it's very back and forth. It's very, you know, as I always do, it's very dialogue driven, and I mean I'm a big fan, as I know I think Connor is as well, of comedy that is able to work in that one scene location. Like two of my favorite shows ever fall into that category, one of them being The Royal Family. Have you watched that one, The Royal Family? It's like a Manchester,
yeah.
British
it's
good, man. It's on British Netflix, so if you
yeah know, but how can I get that here?
Oh, using
the president of Bell Canada has been complaining that people are streaming American Netflix, which we all know is more or less the same thing. So I can't get away with streaming UK Netflix.
It's very easy, I'll tell you after. But there's
cool, just go to your place.
There's another one that I'm going to recommend to people, because no one here has watched it, but it did like 8 seasons in Britain, and it's brilliant. It's called Ideal, and it's about this pot dealer, and it's set in his apartment, and it's just about all the eccentric weirdos who come and buy weed off him and pop in and out, and it's all set in one little apartment, the whole thing, and it's a 30-minute show every week, and yeah, they've done tons of episodes, and it is brilliant, and it's that simple, and I love those sort of shows. Because they're not relying on any gimmicks or any flashiness or anything. It has to be good writing, otherwise it's not a good show.
For sure.
So that's all it has to rely on. So I really feel like it, you know, that's when you see the best sort of writing. I don't know if you would agree.
But. Yeah, no, I definitely think there's a lot to be said for that. Because, yeah, you can fall into writing, especially like sort of, I'm going to say loosely sort of say the popularistic kind of programs and plays and TV programs and films that do rely on
the spectacle.
Perhaps, yeah, set pieces, particularly. I mean, perhaps even sort of slapstick kind of stuff, which I mean is perfectly funny. But I totally agree. The fact that if you sort of confine yourself to a certain sort of parameter, very limited parameter, then you really have to make sure that what you can work with is done as best as possible. And in this case,